Up next from the Stanford Social Innovation Review, FSG Social Impact Advisors Managing Director Mark Kramer shares tools foundations can use to make impact evaluations less burdensome on Social Innovation Conversations. Hi, I'm Eric Nee, the Managing Editor of the Stanford Social Innovation Review.
And I'm Chris Deigelmeyer, the Executive Director of the Center for Social Innovation at the Stanford Graduate School of Business.
Welcome to Social Innovation Conversations. Today, we're bringing you a new presentation in the Stanford Social Innovation Review Talks series. Stanford Social Innovation Review provides leaders in the nonprofit, government, and business sectors with the ideas, tools, and skills needed to solve social problems. For more information, visit us online at ssireview.org.
And now, here is our presentation in the Stanford Social Innovation Review Talk Series.
I figure if you start the morning talking about evaluation, the day can only get better. So we'll try and get this out of the way. But I also have looked through the list of people who are here today, and it is a terrific group. With a tremendous variety of backgrounds, different parts of the country, different kinds of organizations. And I hope we can generate a bit of a discussion among ourselves about the experiences we've had with evaluation and the ways in which we can make it more effective. Because I think, at least for me, that really is the challenge. How do we use evaluation to make our own work more effective, to become more successful at achieving the kind of social change we want to achieve? And that leads to a very different way of thinking about evaluation than, I would argue, than the traditional approach in philanthropy and in the nonprofit sector. Let me just ask at the beginning, how many people here have been involved with, their organization has commissioned or been the subject of a formal sort of third-party evaluation? That's a lot. And how many of you learned something from that evaluation that was extremely important in making your organization more effective? Yes, I would say that's about 1 out of 5. Which is actually higher than I would have bet. And so there's the problem. There's the problem. But I actually think that we are on the cusp of a new era in evaluation. I mean, here we are at Stanford, where Google was created. And think about the power of Google to organize the world's information. I mean, what technology is enabling us to do today that we couldn't do even 5 years ago in the way of capturing and sorting and analyzing data is truly extraordinary. And if your experience is like most nonprofits and foundations, and you think about the level of technology you've been employing, it probably is nowhere near the potential that's out there today. And I believe we can really harness this new technology and this new potential to be much more impactful about the way we achieve our social impact and the way we measure the impact we achieve. What I believe is most important is for us to develop actionable knowledge, not pure research or theoretical research, but knowledge that itself produces social impact. So let me give you an example. The Annie E. Casey Foundation has a program working to improve lives in inner cities in about a dozen different inner cities in the U.S. And it's focused on wealth creation, largely. And they have a set of metrics that they measure, some very simple and basic metrics, like how many people own their own home. They also look at things like how many kids have missed more than 20 days of school, or how many people have participated in election and voted, to look at civic engagement. But what's really interesting about this program is that instead of hiring just formal evaluators from the university, Casey actually hired residents in the neighborhoods where they were working to collect data about their own communities. They actually took unemployed people and hired them to be the ones to collect the evaluation data. It had some very interesting unintended consequences. For one thing, it helped bring the community together. They actually began to have town meetings, community meetings. They actually published a book about their own community. But what's most interesting is it surfaced some issues that Casey hadn't been aware of. So Casey had not been thinking about predatory lending a few years ago when this happened. But it rose to the surface from the information gathered by the community members. And the information they gathered actually enabled them to bring a lawsuit against four predatory lenders in their community, recover $2.5 million, and get legislation passed to prohibit that kind of predatory lending in their community going forward. You know, now there's an evaluation. But the key is it wasn't ancillary to the work that the foundation or the organization was trying to achieve. It was really integrated. It was a tool to collect knowledge and to empower people in a way that itself advanced the mission. And we talked to the evaluation officer at Casey about this, and he said, why did you, you know, conceive of this design? And he said, well, we're not going to be in this community forever, and the agencies we fund aren't going to be in the community, we're not going to be funding them forever. So we need to empower the residents to be able to hold the agencies that serve them accountable for their performance. And if we can empower them to do that, we'll have made a lasting change in the community. So this way of thinking about evaluation that is integrated, that creates actionable knowledge, that itself delivers social impact, is very different from the traditional approach in the field. And we've seen some movement toward it. And there are not materials, by the way, in your binder about this presentation, but on the table outside is a report. There are copies for everybody that we did recently based on a study of about 100 different foundations and evaluators. And what we found was a trend in the field toward more timely, more pragmatic, and more forward-looking approaches to evaluation. And I used to think that having better evaluation tools would be a nice thing to have. But, you know, we're all doing important work in the world. We all know how good the work we're doing is. So it would be nice, but it isn't necessary. I've actually come to believe that figuring out how to do evaluation effectively is the key to unlocking the true potential of the nonprofit sector. And in fact, is essential and urgent. Because you look at the nonprofit sector in America today, and it is by far the largest, the most vibrant, the most robust, creative nonprofit sector in the world. And you look at charitable giving, and in the last 25 years, annual charitable contributions have grown by 250% in real dollars. And then you look at where we are as a country on the critical social issues that our nonprofit sector is working so hard to address. You know, healthcare, what a mess. 45 million uninsured people. 3/4 of all bankruptcies are because of healthcare costs. So, you know, what kind of country gives you a choice between bankruptcy and sickness? In education, 16 out of 100 high school students will not graduate, only 16 will graduate college on time. In the environment, in poverty, among the 30 developed nations in the OECD, we have the second highest percentage of children living in poverty. These are shocking statistics, and they've gotten worse over the last 25 years at the same time that our nonprofit sector has grown and the charitable giving has grown. Now, we ourselves are a nonprofit, and I work with nonprofits every day, and I know how hard people work in this field. And I know what sacrifices they make to run their organizations, to be part of this field, and to do the work they do. So I don't believe we're going to solve these problems by working harder. And I don't believe we're going to solve them by raising a little bit more money. The only way I think we can really make a difference, really make a change, is by becoming more knowledgeable and more collaborative about addressing the issues we're trying to address as a sector. This shift in thinking about evaluation is not an easy one for the field to go through. Because I would argue that we got off on the wrong track in how we think about evaluation in philanthropy and the nonprofit sector. We got off on the wrong track a long time ago. And it's been hard for us to come back to a new way of doing things. You know, all of us are in the business of trying to solve big problems with limited resources, whether we're on the funder side or whether we're a grantee. And so the question is, how do you do that? Where do you get the leverage? And probably 100 years ago or so, back in the days of Carnegie and Rockefeller, they had a good idea. They said, you know, we don't have a lot of money relative to the problems we're trying to solve, but we can experiment, we can try new things. We can do things that government couldn't do or that other individuals couldn't do. So the way we'll achieve social change is we'll experiment, we'll try new things, we'll do little pilot projects that we can afford, and then we'll hire an evaluator to come in and prove that, you know, this intervention caused that outcome. And then the government or somebody will come along and roll this out on a large scale because we've shown them a solution to the problem. And where that leads you in terms of evaluation is a very intensive, very expensive study of the ultimate outcomes that tries to show attribution, that tries to show that the change would not have happened but for this grant. And the first problem with this sort of theory of change is that it doesn't happen. I mean, there are some examples in the history of philanthropy of foundations funding something on a pilot project that then gets rolled out. Head Start is one such example. I have to say, in my research, I don't think I've found more than a dozen examples in the history of philanthropy. It really doesn't happen much. And certainly, given where government is today, and if they have any money left, it's certainly not likely to be the role that government's going to play going forward. The second problem with this model is it's very mechanistic. It's very linear. It says, you know, if we have a theory of change, if we fund this, that social outcome will happen. And it's a sort of pulling a lever, cause and effect idea. And in our experience, that's not really how social change happens or how lasting social change happens. And frankly, the idea that, given the complexity of problems today, the idea that we can figure out a solution sitting at a foundation or sitting at a nonprofit and then fund it and things will go just as we expected seems pretty unrealistic. But the last problem with this approach is it leads you to evaluate each individual grant separately. And it leads you to a very long-term analysis because you have to be looking at the ultimate outcome to see what the impact was. And it leads you to a very costly analysis that tries, again, to get at this issue of attribution. So at the end of the day, very, very few grants are evaluated. Often by the time the evaluation report comes in, the project is long done and the funder has moved off onto other things. And frankly, most of the evaluation data out there is never used. But we still get trapped into this model because we still think of evaluation as being about accountability. You know, what happened to our grant money? and about replication. You know, let's prove that this intervention worked, and then other people will replicate it. And I would argue that it's possible to use evaluation that way, but not very helpful. So in this study that is outside for you to pick up, we asked a very simple question. We said, give us an example of an evaluation that has made a difference, where somebody did something differently because of the evaluation, whether it's the grantee or the funder, whoever it might be, but some different result came about because of the actionable knowledge that came from the evaluation. And as you can imagine, that eliminated an awful lot of evaluations. But what we found was very interesting, and it had the ones we found had some common threads that we saw through all of them. And they looked very different from this traditional approach. First, they were timely, because if you want information to make better decisions, to improve your implementation, to be more effective, you can't wait 5 years for an outcome. You need to know what's going on currently, every month, every quarter. Second, they were pragmatic. They weren't real expensive. Often they were very inexpensive. But they brought useful data forward. It wasn't as reliable as an academic study. Some of the data might have had questionable reliability. But having it on a current basis proved much more useful than waiting for the end result. You know, I sometimes think that the old model of evaluation is similar to if companies waited until the audited annual report came out at the end of the year before they made any management decisions. Instead of getting current information of all kinds every week that helps them make adjustments along the way. And that current information isn't audited and it isn't perfect and some of it's wrong, but getting it in time to do something about it makes it much more helpful. The other thing I sometimes think about with this model of evaluating each grant separately, I mean, imagine if every investor in a company, every stockholder, went through their own process to figure out the financial returns that company had. Imagine the cost if each stockholder had to calculate the financial returns separately, as opposed to having a single financial statement with a common set of metrics that everybody can look at. And yet that's really where we are in the nonprofit sector, where each funder says to us, we want you to calculate separately the impact of our grant and to report to us on a set of metrics that we've devised. And the result is hugely inefficient. So when we found these more successful examples of evaluation, they were more pragmatic, they were more timely, they were also forward-looking. The evaluators and the information wasn't just about what had happened in the past, but it was very much about what are the implications of this going forward. It helped the organization or the foundation be more effective going forward, to refine its strategy, to refine its operations. And the last thing I would say that these processes had in common is they were ongoing processes. It wasn't a one-time evaluation study that culminated in a one-time report. It was an ongoing process, an ongoing flow of information that came into funders and managers all the time. And of course, that makes sense too, because we always need to know what's happening in order to be able to make better decisions. When we looked in more detail at these different approaches to evaluation and saw how organizations were using them, we found they were really using them in three ways. One was to improve their planning and clarify their goals. The second was to improve the implementation and operations going forward. And the third was really to track the progress on the social issue that they were trying to affect, not the individual grant or grantee, but on the issue overall. So let me give you a couple examples. There's a marvelous article, which is excerpted in the report, by John Sawhill, who used to be the CEO of the Nature Conservancy. And he did a study about evaluation and wrote about his own experience at the Nature Conservancy with evaluation. And what they discovered is that every time they changed what they were measuring, they ended up changing the whole operation of the organization because their conception of the goal began to be different. So initially, they talked about measuring bucks and acres, right? How much money they raised and how much land they bought. But as they began to think about the fact that in order to preserve species, not all acres were equal. And there were some acres where biodiversity was particularly important to preserve. They started to measure more around the preservation of habitats of species. Well, that changed the kind of land they bought and where they bought it. And Sawhill went on to do a study of other nonprofits and how they measure progress toward their mission. And what he found is that the most effective nonprofits had picked very specific, actionable, short-term goals that were on the way toward achieving their mission, but were very far short of actually trying to measure the impact on the mission. So one example he gives is the American Cancer Society. And the American Cancer Society's ultimate mission is to eliminate cancer as a cause of death. It's a pretty big goal. They decided to pick an interim measure, which was by 2015, they would reduce mortality from cancer by 50%. So very specific, very measurable, very time-limited. What's interesting is it changed what they funded, because they'd been funding a tremendous amount of medical research, and while that's important, if their goal was actually to reduce mortality in the next 10 or 15 years, they had to fund different things. They had to fund prevention, getting people to stop smoking, and so on. They had to fund treatment. They had to fund a completely different set of things. So getting clear about what your goals really are and bringing them down to something that is measurable is a tremendously important step and side benefit of conducting evaluation. The second area is around implementation. And there, what I think is a wonderful example is a program that the Gates Foundation funded called Sound Families, which tried to address homelessness in the Northwest region where the Gates Foundation is based. And they wanted to provide services and housing, particularly for single mothers with young kids. And they approached evaluation in a very collaborative and participatory way. Again, not with social scientists coming in to make a study, but with the idea of engaging all the different participants in the program in regular meetings to talk about what was going on. And they found some interesting things. First, they found that their conception of homelessness had been a little too limited, that it turns out there are all kinds of homelessness, and whether it's chronic or transient, whether it's urban or rural, these things are significant differences, and one program isn't going to handle or address the needs of all of them. So first, it really helped them clarify what it was they were trying to achieve. Secondly, by getting this current, timely, informal feedback from all of the agencies that participated, they learned some things they hadn't expected. So one of the things they learned was that some of the housing projects didn't have playgrounds, and the kids didn't have any place to burn off steam, and were getting in trouble, and parents were getting evicted. So they decided going forward they would only fund housing projects that had playgrounds as part of it. Interesting, simple thing, but something they learned from the timely information. The third thing they were able to do is get state and federal funding to complement their own funding, because one of the things they measured was for people who had been in the housing project with the services, had their dependency on public support reduced over time, and had the school attendance of their kids improved, and it had. And they were able to get millions of dollars of support by demonstrating the impact that they'd had. It also brought some new information to the foundation. They hadn't really focused on childcare as being such an important issue in getting the parents back to work. And so the foundation actually created a new program initiative around childcare, hadn't been on the books, hadn't been in the plans because of what they learned. These regular meetings also improved the collaboration among all the different agencies and the service providers and the housing organizations working on the issues. And of course, the nonprofit sector is so fragmented, and each of us works so hard on our own with often so little collaboration or so little information even about what other people working on related issues are doing, that the ability of evaluation and a participatory evaluation process to bring people together to really understand what each other is doing and to learn and to collaborate more effectively is very powerful. We're actually doing a project now for the Packard Foundation, working with their marine fisheries unit, where we're working with 17 different grantees that are all part of a common strategy to come up with a common set of performance metrics and to figure out how to improve the collaboration among them. The last benefit I'll cite from this Gates Sound Families initiative is that collecting the data actually helped many of the agencies change and get better at what they were trying to do. So one of them had a model of trying to put people into single-family homes and help place them in jobs. And they were placing them in pretty low-level, entry-level jobs, and they found out through the evaluation that what people were earning wasn't enabling them to stay in the homes that they'd been put in. And so they changed the job placement program from focusing just on getting people into jobs to getting them into jobs that had more of an upward opportunity and that had higher paying. They began to focus more on training skills so that people could get those higher paid. It changed completely what the agency was doing. And again, became more effective because of the evaluation data. The last example I want to give is the idea of measuring progress toward goals. And one of my favorite examples, a small foundation we looked at, the Z. Smith Reynolds Foundation. And one of their goals is improving the quality of the environment, and in particular, they're working on a river that runs through the territory they're concerned about and trying to improve the quality of water in the river. And so as part of their evaluation, they measure sediment levels. And we asked the executive director, well, you know, how do you know if there's a change in the sediment level? It's as a result of your funding or the organizations you funded. And he said, well, first of all, we don't look for attribution, we look for contribution. You know, we'd like to know that the organizations and projects we're funding had some common sense relationship to the changes that were happening. And he said, I believe that common sense is a good enough indicator to tell me whether there's a link between what I'm funding and what's actually happening with the river. And second of all, the point of it isn't to prove what our grants did. The point of it is that I need to know what's happening with sediment in the river if I'm going to make knowledgeable decisions going forward. And if I'm going to try and influence public policy and legislators to get involved, again, I need this data. And it turns out that once you get past the idea of looking grant by grant, and once you get past the idea of proving attribution, there's a tremendous amount of public data out there that is free or very inexpensive, which is useful to enable you to track the progress on the issue you're working on, and in many ways is sufficient. Increasingly, we see a trend of grantees taking a more assertive role in defining what they're going to measure. There had been this kind of catch-22 where the funder gave the money to the grantee, and the grantee said to the funder, tell me what to measure. You gave me the money. You tell me what to measure. But in fact, the grantee actually had much more knowledge of what it would be useful and meaningful and feasible to measure than the funder. And as we've worked with many different funders, we've found most of them are asking almost exactly the same question of their grantees, but just not quite. And the work that creates for the grantees is tremendous. So we've seen interesting models emerging. College Summit is one great example. Interesting, rapidly growing nonprofit that helps kids from struggling high schools get into college. They raised about $50 million recently, and as part of their fundraising, they actually had a sort of prospectus. And in the prospectus, they detailed what they were going to measure and what they were going to report. And when people joined the fundraising, participated, they asked them to agree to accept that common set of measures as the reporting back mechanism. And the funders did. And so now College Summit has a single reporting system which provides the management information that they use for their monthly management meetings. It provides the quarterly information that goes to their board of directors. And it provides the information that goes annually to all of their funders. I mean, imagine the efficiency in that. So I know I'm throwing a lot of different examples at you, but I want to spend some time talking together about how we can really meet this challenge. How can we really become more effective in our work by the way we use evaluation? What are the tools out there we're seeing? What are the mechanisms? What are the benefits? Because I really believe, as I've said, this is the fundamental challenge we face as a field. If we can't measure our impact in a timely, inexpensive, and useful way, we really can't learn. And the problems we face as a society today are so urgent, so severe, that we can't continue working as usual. However hard we work, however much money we raise, we aren't making the progress we need to make on the problems today. And it's only by building knowledge and building collaboration that I believe we can really achieve these goals. So we have some time for conversation and discussion. And I'm particularly interested in, at the outset, those of you who raised your hands when you indicated you'd had an experience with evaluation that really had been important and helpful. I'd love to hear about those. But I'd also love to take any questions or comments people have.
One of the points you made was that we needed to improve collaboration in the industry. I agree with that wholeheartedly. But do you feel that one potential barrier to that is the interest of a foundation to protect their image and reputation, in that when they undergo these evaluations and they identify that, hey, maybe we didn't do this as effectively as we wanted, the very act of publicizing that in a way where other organizations can see that, I mean, do you think that may incentivize them not to share the information?
You know, there's an interesting report that was published by the Hewlett Foundation and the Irvine Foundation about a year ago They had jointly embarked on a very costly, I think, 20-some million dollar community building initiative, and it didn't work. And they published the evaluation report in the hopes that others in the field would learn from their experience. And they actually got a tremendous amount of attention and press, and really very positive attention, for having been honest and transparent and open enough to publish this for other people to benefit. I think that kind of built into your question is the notion that evaluation is about how well did our grant do. And I do think that that's where we have to get away from. Now, I grant you that's still where most funders and foundations are. But the idea that evaluation is about the report and is about success or failure is really that old model of evaluation. And the newer model, you know, isn't telling you success or failure, it's telling you how to improve as you go along. So I think that one of the things we need to do is take the emphasis off of, did we publish the report, is the information public, and instead say, how do we know if we're getting better at what we're trying to achieve?
I'd like to hear about some of the inexpensive tools that you're referring to. In Chicago, we still have a lot of funders who are using the old model and want massive evaluations that tell them how well their money was spent, but will not pay for evaluation. And it can be a survey that's small. We can't use the internet at all times because not all of our constituents have access to the internet. So you keep kind of talking about these inexpensive tools.
Sure. And I will say, while most funders are where you still describe them to be, what was very surprising to us is we talked to really all of the foundations that have full-time internal evaluation staff, and that's a small number, it's maybe 36 or so, but there really was an absolute consistency in the perspective of the evaluation staff at these foundations of trying to move away from that older model and trying to move toward the new one. We're actually doing a study now on the trustee perspective on evaluation, because our belief is that the trustee perspective is still rooted in the older model of what did our grant accomplish, and that that's part of what's holding the field back. But in terms of inexpensive examples, you know, they almost don't feel like evaluation. So one example I like very much, the Ball Foundation funds inner city high schools, and they really focus on trying to strengthen teacher preparedness because the teacher is so important in the classroom. And so they had a good idea. They had a program where they said, we'll take a handful of teachers out of a number of schools, we'll put them through a rigorous training, they'll come back into the school, and then in a kind of cascade model, they'll train the other teachers in the school, and there'll be this sort of trickle-down effect. Well, after they started, one of the staff members from the foundation started going to the schools, and they actually did a focus group with teachers. They talked to the administrators. They interviewed some of the teachers. Basically, a staff person from the foundation was probably spending half a day a week gathering information about the program in about 6 schools. And what they found was it didn't work because of things they hadn't thought about. So there weren't substitute teachers to take over classes, so the returning teachers didn't have time to meet with other teachers and train them. There were implications about the teachers' union that they hadn't thought to address. There were all kinds of issues. But they were able to adapt and fix the program. They decided that they would now send trainers into schools to work with teachers, and they would pay for temporary teachers to take over, substitute teachers to take over, so that the permanent teachers had time to attend these trainings. They were able to fix the program. One other very simple example, another kind of school example, Central Healthcare Foundation of Massachusetts, a tiny foundation, has 2 part-time staff, had a good idea there as well. They were concerned about health care and dental care, and kids in inner city communities weren't getting dental care. And they said, what if we sent dental technicians into the schools? And the kids could actually be seen and at least diagnosed, if not treated, by the dental technician in the school. was a great idea. For it to work, the parents had to sign parental permission slips. And it turns out the teachers weren't doing a very good job of collecting these slips, and so the whole program wasn't working. So again, the staff from the foundation went into the schools, they saw this, and they created a simple contest, a competition, a prize, for the teacher who had the highest percent of her kids with signed permission slips. And it changed the program. There's another foundation that's focused on lobbying. And they've said, you know, can't afford to do expensive polling, but we know some people in the state legislature and we know some staffers, and we're in touch with them by telephone. Another foundation we came across used to get written reports from their grantees every year about each grant, very common process. They found they weren't reading them, and it was probably wasting the grantees' time to do it. We heard some marvelous stories, by the way, of grantees who had actually put pictures of their grandchildren in the report because they were so sure that, you know, it would never be read by anybody at the foundation. And of course it was not, you know. So what this foundation decided to do was to have the program officers just do a 20-minute phone call with each grantee once a year. And it turned out to be much more useful information that they got out of it and a much more useful dialogue. So there is all kinds of costly evaluation data that is being collected that nobody uses. We worked with one very large foundation just around the question of, could they design a system that only collected information that got used and didn't collect any information that didn't? And it was a completely different system than the way the foundation had traditionally operated. So lots of little ways.
You're giving the same speech to foundation officers, I hope.
All the time. Yes.
Yes, I think we all embrace your agreement here that we need to have new forms and innovative forms of evaluation, pragmatic evaluations from foundations and government. Can you share some of the names of these foundations and governmental agencies that have embraced this new form of evaluation?
Sure, but I think in the report are a number of case studies and also a list of the folks we interviewed. And most of these foundations are ones that are embracing this new approach. I think we see it much more on the West Coast than the East Coast. So we see many more examples of it at Hewlett, Packard, Irvine than we do at Ford, Carnegie, Rockefeller. I think we see it actually among smaller foundations more often than among some of the biggest, because out of necessity, they've had to be creative, they've had to be pragmatic. They couldn't afford to go hire the RAND Corporation to do a study. And so actually, one of the things that was really interesting to us that we did not expect in this study is how many of the examples came from smaller foundations that were just figuring stuff out for themselves. Yes, sir.
I direct a nonprofit, and from my perspective, you know, when it comes to foundation evaluation, I'm going to do whatever they tell me to do to keep the money coming. But what really is valuable to me, though, is how we evaluate ourselves, because that's how we can improve our programs. And so one of the things we did this year is when we've been setting kind of measurable outcomes. Well, this year we challenged the staff to really take those. We put together teams that would really take those and say, okay, what can we learn from this about what we need to be doing better? And even though we'd been kind of collecting the information before, it was that mere fact that we were really challenging people and then bringing together teams and other people with them and just putting a lot of emphasis on thinking about it that seemed to make the most difference. We had the best sort of discussion that helped us use our past experience to do better in the future that we've ever had, I think, because we said we're going to really put some focus on this, and we expect, you know, when you do your evaluation, the focus is not to prove what you did, it's to figure out how to do better, and then brought people together to talk with them about it and really spend some time on it. It made a big difference. And as far as funders, I don't control that, you know, what they want, but I can control how we evaluate ourselves and how we use that to do better.
Sure. Is there a specific brief example you can give of a change that came about at your organization because of this process?
Well, we just went through it, but yeah. A specific example is...
Or how you're thinking about what the organization's work is?
Well, One specific example is a group that, or a program that we have that does analysis on rural issues in rural public policy. And, you know, analysis is one of those things, you do the analysis and put it out there. But one of the results of that was that they said, you know, some of our analysis, we don't really know how effectively it's used. So we're going to be much more deliberate about examining some of the new online ways of disseminating information and be much more aggressive about that.
Sure.
Because we're putting a lot of stuff out there. We're not sure how much it's being used. And some of the online stuff, you can measure open rates and you can do a lot of things. So, I mean, that's just one example.
Sure. No, that's a good example. And I think it's... Well, the foundation field is not known to move quickly. So I think even though we're seeing change in that field, you know, hopefully we'll all still be around when that change comes to fully pass. But it's one of the really strange ideas out there is the notion that the information that I want as a funder is somehow different from the information you want running your organization trying to achieve the social impact. Or, frankly, is different than the beneficiaries would like to know about the issues that are affecting their own lives. Or is different than the legislature needs to know about public policy. I mean, in theory, we're all trying to solve the problem. And the information we need, if it is probative information about the effectiveness of an intervention or solution, is information we'd all like to have. Now, it may need to be packaged differently. One of the interesting things we discovered is that people went beyond just an evaluation report. But, for example, in Sound Families, the evaluator actually did a newsletter that went to the families in the housing projects with data about what was happening to their peers. And that actually was very motivational for them. And they did a separate report for the foundation, and they did a separate study for the legislature to try and get funding. And there were lots of kind of working papers and notes from the collaborations among the different grantees and agencies. So the same evaluation process produced many different results, but it was on the same common body of data. And I think that it is possible, not always, but many times and more often than we think, it is possible to push back on the funder and say, you know, that's great, and I hear you. We're already collecting this information for our management purposes or for that other foundation. Is that close enough? And I think we've seen some flexibility on the part of funders. Yes, sir.
I'm looking at it from the side of the trustee. I'm on the board of the United Way of Vancouver, Canada. And we've gone through a very significant strategic refocusing, so that we're only focusing on three areas, 0 to 6, 6 to 12, and the elderly. Small items, right?
Right.
Before that, there was this general shotgun approach to funding. We're getting much more focused on who we will fund. As part of the funding deal and the partnership, we're requiring those we fund to evaluate the social impact of what they're doing. Of course, what they're now asking for, in addition to the funding for what they're doing, is funding to evaluate what they're doing.
Right.
So we're getting pushback. They're saying they don't like this deal that we're proposing. Any thoughts?
Well, sure. First of all, it does cost money to gather data and to report it. I think if you take the traditional view and say there's the grant has social impact, and then over here there's evaluation data which has its own cost and its own purpose, then it seems pretty burdensome. If you say we're really trying to collect data that will have an impact, think about the Casey Foundation example I started with at the beginning, where they hired people in the neighborhood. So the evaluation money was actually going to help the mission because it was paying unemployed people in the neighborhoods. They were trying to improve economic outcomes. And the information that was being generated actually had impact. So there's a lot of talk about capacity building in nonprofits, and it's a hugely important area, and it is one I think funders are increasingly sensitive to. And the way I would think about that example is the need to build the capacity of nonprofits to be able to gather information, to be able to operate more effectively and make better decisions. And that being able to report back to you is a kind of incidental benefit. But that it is worth investing in. Because again, we have this paradox of this huge nonprofit sector. I mean, $300 billion a year in charitable contributions, and problems aren't getting solved. So we gotta find ways to work differently.
Hi, I'm Cheryl with the YWCA of Oahu, and we've talked a lot about quantitative data, and I'm wondering what role qualitative measures have as we're looking at social impact.
Sure. Qualitative measures are very important. I don't think we've ever seen a really good evaluation that didn't have some combination of both. And, you know, frankly, to be entirely honest, we're struggling with this ourselves at FSG as a nonprofit. We're trying to figure out how we measure our own impact. And, of course, a lot of what we do is write reports like this. And we can tell you how many people have copies. But going beyond that, something we're struggling with. And there's a lot of anecdotal and qualitative information that says we hear about people using it. I get invited to give talks like this. Something must be good coming out of it. But we struggle with it. I think there are ways to use sort of quasi-quantitative data. And this is something we've found. So a really interesting example was an economic development project in Western Africa. And the evaluators went in and they measured various kinds of economic outcomes, changes in income, and so on. But the other thing they did is they asked stakeholders in the community, what are the five most important things that came out of this project, as far as you're concerned? And then they aggregated that data. And at the end of the day, they were able to say, you know, 62% said that improving my child's aspirations was one of the most important things that came out of this. So there's a kind of quantitative way of conveying qualitative information.
My name is Beth Rosen. I'm with the Humane Society of the United States, located in Washington, D.C. I was one of the people who raised our hand as an entity who's benefited
Yes.
from an evaluation, a third-party evaluation. One of the struggles we had as an organization prior to our formal evaluation is we wanted to measure the work we did by the types of animals we seek to help, and that's really our constituency at the end of the day. But going through a more formalized evaluation and strategy process, we realized that what we really want to measure are inroads in public policy, corporate policy reform, education engagement, direct care and service, as well as our organizational capacity. So rather than each of our divisions at the Humane Society having their own section-by-section outcomes that they sought to use as a focus point, we now have 5 impact areas and 15 outcomes that govern our entire organization, which has brought an enormous sense of camaraderie among our 550-plus staff who didn't know where they necessarily fit into the larger picture. I guess my question is, and this is something that we've been struggling a lot at the Humane Society, is differentiating and measuring some quick wins or short-term outcomes versus longer-term theory of change, and that's been especially relevant in our public policy work, namely with think tanks like Pew and UN-based bodies who are working to World Bank and so forth to change their opinions about the agribusiness. And so in our competitive and innovative climate at the Humane Society, we are out for quick wins and high sense of measurability, but we are trying to figure out if we need to create standardized theories of change that govern our overall scorecard, our dashboard, or if we should give staff the creativity and the leverage to develop their own theory of change, but how does marker 7 in a theory equate with one person's theory of change to another person's?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first observation I'll make, it's a great example and a great story, is that you had for the whole 550-person organization 15 outcomes that you were pursuing, which is great. I've seen so many evaluation systems collapse under their own weight because of the desire to measure so many different things, and they all seem like a good idea. The ones that succeed measure very few. And in fact, you know, we've seen some great systems that get down to basically two or three metrics. And they're not always obvious. One foundation that was focused on housing issues found that the utilities being turned off was the last step before homelessness for many people. And so they actually were able to get information from the utility about the rates at which electricity was being turned off in the community they were working. And that was the measure they used. So I think that's great. And the idea of it helping unify the organization is absolutely one of the powerful benefits that come about. The question you raised is really about, in part, how do you measure advocacy? How do you measure lobbying, policy change, these very long-term things? The problem is still very much if you're rooted in the older model that says it's about success or failure and attribution, or the newer model that says, what do we need to know to be more effective and make better decisions? It's very hard to measure success or failure in lobbying. I mean, the legislation gets passed, but there's a lot of important things that happen that don't get passed. Or they could have gotten passed but for a change in an election or something else completely outside your control. Or there's so many different people working on the issue that whether your grantee was material or not, who knows? We did an interesting evaluation for the Hewlett Foundation of their K-12 education policy reform in California. And they're very focused on policy reform in the state. And we actually found that about $30 million in grant making had generated $9 billion in new funding for inner city schools in California. Again, it's contribution, not attribution. It wasn't only Hewlett by any means. But this is actually very interesting. Instead of going to Hewlett's grantees, we went to the field and we talked to legislators and staffers and teachers' union and teachers and others in the community. And we tried to identify what legislative changes had happened. And then we talked to people involved and said which organizations seemed to matter in bringing this change about. And we were able to come up with two lists. And the first list was organizations that Hewlett had funded that had been perceived as being very effective in causing policy change. The other list was even more interesting. It was the organizations Hewlett hadn't funded that were also perceived to be effective. Because, of course, from a funder's point of view, evaluation shouldn't just be about whether the grant you made worked. It's about whether you're making the right choices and saying no to the correct people and yes to the correct people. And so this is actually the first time we've been able to actually look at something and say, here's an evaluation that shows you opportunities you missed. But again, you can get very good information about what legislators are thinking and hearing, what sources of information they perceive as reliable, which organizations they go to, whether new bills are introduced, et cetera. You can't get success or failure, but you can get a good sense of whether a theory of change is getting traction or not.
Think tanks or entities where, for example, our animal research issues, it could take 50 years to make measurable, to really say, you know.
And that's where the idea of picking specific interim measures, like the example I used with the Nature Conservancy or the American Cancer Society, that aren't your ultimate goal. But, you know, if your ultimate goal is going to be reached, the think tank needs to be producing papers. So are they? And the papers need to get distributed and read. So are they? And you should be able to interview a handful of thought leaders and get a sense of whether people are paying attention to it. So are they? And that kind of thing. So, yes, sir, you've been very...
Thank you. Jim Roberts, San Luis Obispo. You know, in the human services industry, the trend is very strong and definitive amongst funders, both foundational and governmental, to fund evidence-based practices. our experience over the last 7 years is that they're very, you know, highly proprietary. They do a great job of being a cash cow for, you know, clinical psychologists, but they're very insensitive. It's like forcing the clients to fit the model and not the model to fit the client. And yet that's the environment that we've got to work within. So I'd really like to hear your comments about this whole trend towards, for good reason, evidence-based practices, and yet very often I'm not so sure they really serve in promoting the kinds of change that we want to see.
And so I would try and draw a distinction, and we'll see if I get away with it. I think that there is, that evidence-based practice is essential, and the knowledge we build through evaluation, through monitoring and performance assessment is what enables us to make better choices based on that evidence. But there's also, again, this old model that says social change is kind of mechanistic. And we can try a program here, and if it works, then it'll work everywhere. And our experience is that that's not true. You know, the management of the program might be great here and not so good there. The local community or political context might be very different. Or times may have changed, and the thing that you did 5 years ago that worked so well, that you've now got this thick evaluation study demonstrating, may not work today. I know you're going to talk about social entrepreneurship and social entrepreneurs later, and that's a field that's very close to my heart. And one of the reasons is it takes somebody out there working the change to make it happen. It's not about the model and then getting the model replicated or blown out, I believe. It's about real live people being out there making the change happen in their communities. And they certainly can learn from each other, but they also need to take into account what's different about their regions. So that would be the distinction I'd try and draw. So I just want to urge all of us here, it is possible to make a change in this field, to move beyond the traditional model of evaluation that I grant you a majority of funders are still stuck in, and many of us are still stuck in. It's not going to happen all at once, and it's not going to happen because funders change and we don't, or because we change and funders don't. It's got to be an iterative dialogue. But what I really encourage you to do is with your funders or with your grantees, depending on which side of the table you sit, begin the dialogue about how evaluation can be simpler, less expensive, more timely, more meaningful, and can really help us be more effective in the tremendously important work that all of us are doing. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a presentation from Stanford Social Innovation Review. Stanford Social Innovation Review provides leaders in the nonprofit, government, and business sectors with the ideas, tools, and skills needed to solve social problems. For more information, visit us online at ssireview.org.
The post-production audio engineer for this program was Rob Lepper. Our website editor was Marguerite Rigoglioso. The series producer is Bernadette Clavier.
This is Chris Deigelmeyer
and Eric Nie on Social Innovation Conversations.
Thank you for listening.